coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. We're going to go inside this truck and see an SSL console and hear from Steve and Dan all about the technology. That's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, saving, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the new Ruby console from Lavo. See Lavo in your future at lavo.com/twrt. And by the Telos Alliance, shaping the future of audio, inspiring you to create the most exciting and engaging audio experiences imaginable. Visit telosalliance.com/opt-in.
Hey friends, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. It's the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And today we are taking an incredible detour. We're in a truck, an amazing truck that's owned by the folks at SSL, Solid State Logic. And they are taking this truck around America and maybe into Canada and northern Mexico too. Who knows? We'll see. And so my guests are the gentlemen who know all about SSL equipment and the incredible advances that SSL is making into recording and mixing technology. So we're going to be talking here with Steve. Steve, your last name is?
Zaretsky.
Zaretsky. And also Dan Griffin.
Griffin.
Right? Steve and Dan are with me. And also Chris Tobin is here as well. Hey, Chris, welcome into the show.
Why, thank you. I'm glad to see you're in a great place, much better than my surroundings. Sadly, it's just a voice booth with a lot of fabric on the wall. That's about it. That's all I can offer.
You're at your usual digs in Newark, New Jersey, at a very famous jazz radio station.
Yes, I am. I'm here at WBGO. Yes, having a good time. Actually, we just did Ted Nash was here this morning. We just did a video with him, so it was good.
Oh, cool. Well, I've been chatting with these gentlemen, Steve and Dan, about their SSL consoles and all the different ways that they're used, including some in radio stations. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the technology that, guess what? It's AOIP. We've been talking about that for years on the show, and SSL has been using that for a while, and they make it easy to use and great for recording venues and mixing, and we'll get into all that in just a few minutes. We'll let Steve and Dan explain the technology behind their equipment, what they're showing and representing, and hey, we'll give you some ideas of what the tech can do, and they're even doing, you know this word we've been talking about, Chris, virtualization?
Nice.
Yeah, they've got a console-less console. They sure do.
Even better. Love it.
It is so cool. I wish I could show. I'm looking at it right now. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our first sponsor, my friends at the Telos Alliance and the OmniaVolt. We'll be right back.
More top radio stations choose Omnia than all other competing processors combined. Now meet the Omnia Volt, sharing lineage with Omnia processors like the Omnia 11, electrifying, competitive, market-leading audio in a compact one-rack unit package. With Omnia Heritage built in, the Omnia Volt includes Dynamics Magic from Omnia chief algorithm designer Cornelius Gould, including six AGC sections from start to finish, deep bass, warmth, and stereo enhancers, five-band time-align limiter, the world's best presets to get you started right, and spectrally pristine final processing designed by Frank Foti. OmniaVolt users love its Quick Tweak feature. Quick Tweak distills years of processing knowledge and proven approaches into simple controls that turn you into a processing pro. Nail your signature sound in minutes using advanced presets or your own settings right from the Volt's front panel or a PC. OmniaVolt brings charisma to your station's audio. FM translators and low-power FM stand out among the crowd. AM stations maximize clarity and coverage. Digital broadcasts sound clear and musical without fatiguing artifacts. Smart design, clearly visible outside and inside. Input and output connections in analog, AES3, Livewire, and multiplex for FM. Automatic input selection handles redundant STLs. Remote control works with today's browsers, tablets, and smartphones. Idealized patch point for external watermarking. And hardened construction to withstand lightning strikes, surges, high RF fields, and harsh conditions.
The new OmniaVolt is stunning. Everyone will know you've got an Omnia on your station.
OmniaVolt is versatile too. DSP Core firmware alters the personality of Volt to fit your changing needs. FM, AM, digital transmission, or studio processing. Volt can even be used as a standalone stereo generator. DSP cores aren't extra cost add-ons. Download the functionality you need for free. The Omnia Volt, Omnia audio processing for any station, and a smart upgrade for aspiring broadcasters. Proven audio processing that'll leave your competitors in the dust.
Thanks a lot to Telos Alliance and Omnia for being a sponsor of this week in Radio Tech. And hey, we were just talking about the Omnia Volt earlier. Well, no, actually, it was last week at a sales meeting that we had in Cleveland, Ohio. Oh my goodness, these things are still flying off the shelf. When you combine the Omnia One and the Omnia Volt, I gotta believe there's over 10,000 of them out there in the world. Very popular processor. And the Omnia Volt is an amazing step up from the Omnia One. So check it out. Thanks again, Omnia, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, Chris. What a pleasure. I'm in the SSL booth. I heard a few weeks ago that it was coming through Nashville and said, hey, we could do a podcast from right here in the truck. So, Chris, this truck is so comfortable. It's just a cool, 68 degrees in here. It's just really, really nice.
Nice.
They've got a generator. Yeah, they got a generator providing power here, nice and stable. Is that a diesel generator?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here I am again with Steve Zaretsky and Dan Griffin. And so, Steve, tell us about yourself and how you educate people about the technology in this truck.
So I'm the VP of Broadcast Sales for Solid State Logic, and we launched this truck about 6 years ago. So it's gone through a couple of different technology revisions. Mm. So about 2 months ago, we kind of launched it with this new IP audio technology, the System T audio console range. Mm-hmm. And primarily we travel around the country visiting television stations, educational institutions, venues, recording studios, and basically kind of drive up to their front door, and people come out into the parking lot, and we're sort of, as you point out, we're self-contained, and we can kind of just fire it up and do a demo right there on the spot. It's kind of like bringing the trade show right to your parking lot and your front door. That's the concept behind this.
Steve, have you been in the realm of audio consoles for a while? Have you seen several technology changes?
You can tell, yeah. I've been in this for a while, yeah. I have been through a few iterations, not quite to the tablet and stone, but you know, we had wires and stuff since I started.
Well, SSL is a 40-year-old company, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. You've been with them for?
I've been with them for 17 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, okay. So they were doing some digital when you came along.
Yes. SSL started doing digital in the 90s. So yeah. We've been doing digital for a very long time. And we've been doing broadcast since the 80s. So we started doing broadcast in analog. And then as we moved into digital, obviously we started making digital products for broadcast and recording studios. And the digital products for broadcast have been really at the forefront of our development from a digital standpoint. But now we also have live consoles for venue, for stadium, concert, touring, churches. And that's been a very big market for us with the live series. So we sort of our main focus in digital is broadcast and live. And then we still make analog consoles for music, and we make a variety of digital products for music as well.
I will want to ask you about the analog consoles for music. That's interesting that some people still want that kind
absolutely,
of technology.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we'll talk to Dan here for a second. Dan, what's your function with the company?
I am the product specialist and the engineer for the truck. So I drive this truck all over the United States, and occasionally we do go into Canada, which you mentioned before. I also work with keeping all the gear on the truck running. So I was part of the team that commissioned this. So as Steve mentioned, we just put this console in a couple months ago in Los Angeles. So we have an office out there, and me and several of my colleagues ran all new cabling, installed these consoles, configured and commissioned everything. So I'm sort of, I do demos as well as engineer and also drive all over the place. So.
Now, this truck has a lot of audio over IP in it, and oftentimes in the broadcast, in the radio world, we're talking about AOIP from people like Livewire or Wheatnet or Ravenna, and now AES-67. Sometimes Dante comes into play in that conversation. This truck is full of Dante technology, right?
That's correct, yes.
So what can you kind of give us what you know about Dante, because at least as a radio engineer. I've only briefly touched on it. In fact, we did a project with the folks at Yamaha to interconnect using AES-67 compatibility between these different protocols to do a demonstration video.
Right.
So tell us about Dante, why it was selected, and why it's in this truck.
So Dante, when SSL developed the System T range of consoles, we recognized that IP was the way forward in terms of a long-term view of where we were technologically. Mm-hmm. SSL is actually one of the collaborators of MADI. So we developed the MADI standard back in the 90s, and we were making MADI consoles for many, many years. But we looked at that and thought another TDM platform that was more complex from a sharing perspective, in broadcast in particular, and live sound for that matter as well, multiple control rooms sharing resources easily was a high priority for us, and making it inexpensive for people to network multiple control rooms together in a facility. And Dante was really the obvious solution at the time, and I think we've been proven correct in terms of what they've brought to the market, which is a plug-and-play capability with auto-discovery and control all on the same network cabling. Some of the other technologies that you've mentioned are either proprietary to a particular manufacturer, or other manufacturers, if they want to subscribe to that, they have to basically follow that manufacturer's protocols. Or in the case of AES-67, you really just have a transport mechanism. Yeah. You don't have auto discovery. You don't have device information. There's really no metadata with AES-67. In essence, it's really just like MADI over Ethernet. So it's basically just a dumb kind of transport mechanism. It doesn't have any of the device discovery mechanisms that Dante has.
Right.
So Dante has proven to be a really viable solution for us, especially in broadcast where you have wireless microphones and intercom systems and a multitude of devices that all are on the Dante platform and can just basically plug into the same switch network, and all of those devices from different manufacturers just show up and play nicely together.
Wow. Good deal. So you mentioned, Dan, that you helped to wire this truck. And were you here for unwiring it before it got rewired?
I was, yeah.
Because my imagination is you pulled out more wire than you put in, but maybe your story's different.
What? That's correct. What we had in here before was a console called the C10, which was all MADI-based. So we never had really a ton of analog tie lines throughout the truck. We were never hauling that around. But we did actually have significantly more fiber than was required even with the Dante system. Because Dante isn't point-to-point, because it is on a network, we deployed switches, and it's all redundant, so we have a backup network running at all times. So we deployed switches in all the racks in the truck, which you guys can't see, but there is a rack in the rear of the truck and here in the front, and then also in the middle. So by doing that, we're able to connect all the I/O devices and the consoles locally and not have to run cables for everything back and forth in the truck. So we did indeed pull out much more than we put in. And it's nice, too, now that if we change as we go along, if we want to add another device, like as Steve mentioned, we could add a new device that we've developed, or we could add anything from another manufacturer that's Dante, and we could bolt it into any rack anywhere. We don't have to worry about if we've run the cable overhead or in the floor, which is all the cables in the truck are located in those two places. We can just connect it locally at that rack. So it makes integrating things much, much easier.
You know, this is what we've noticed, and I think Chris would easily attest to this too. Chris built a radio station some years ago in New York, all on audio over IP, in a pretty early project. And you mentioned the benefits there of Dante, like the auto discovery. And typically, each of these different systems has their own, has these things in them, but they don't talk to each other. And yes, AES-67 only, you know, connects the audio, so it's a lot of typing and, you know, just to get two things to talk, but at least you can get two things to talk if you need to. For example, if we brought, you know, folks know that I work for the guys at Axia. If we brought an Axia console in here, we could hook it into your network and at least get audio to pass between those two, because Dante does AES-67.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
What is the future look like with Dante moving in with and being compatible with this SMPTE standard? Was it 2110?
Yes, yeah, SMPTE 2110.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that it's as simple as that, really, in that the AES-67 as the audio component of the SMPTE 2110 standard, and the fact that Dante has updated their firmware to be AES-67 compliant, means that any kind of AES-67 devices that are incorporated into the same network will be able to be seen and heard. Actually, one of our systems engineers in New York has been participating in the AIMS group, which is the the audio the manufacturers group that has done these interoperability things prior to NAB and IBC, the two big broadcast shows in Europe and the States. And we've been bringing the System T components to those interop compatibility sessions. And so, you know, we've been participating in all these AIMS developments as well simultaneously.
So along with the SIMT 2110, and I've also heard thrown around this acronym NMOS, which has now either dissolved or turned their work over into a couple of new control standards.
Correct.
What can you tell me about these?
So NMOS is yet another group that has basically developed, a control protocol standard that will, in theory, provide some control data transported on that same network with the AES-67 signals. What's interesting about a lot of these kind of other protocols is that they're kind of left to be interpreted by different manufacturers. The beauty of Dante is that you, as a manufacturer that is part of the Dante group, you're buying a set of chips from Audinate, who's the parent company that developed the Dante standard. So anyone that puts a Dante chipset in their product is guaranteed interoperability, guaranteed compatibility. There's no interpretation to how do you deploy that NMOS or that AES-67 type of device. So Dante kind of takes a lot of that. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. You know, even MADI, as I said, we developed MADI. MADI had many different form factors. You know, it had MADI with 64 channels, MADI has 56 channels, MADI with error correction, sample rate converters, you know, MADI on copper, MADI on fiber. So there was a lot of different factors of MADI that not necessarily everything that was MADI plugged in together worked out of the box. The beauty of Dante is everything just works out of the box.
This, you remind me so much of my favorite phrase, is this is the beauty of standards. There are so many of them.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Chris, Tobin, I almost went
and
to you.
If I could just interrupt one second. So Dante is not a standard. Mm-hmm. Dante is a technology, you know, kind of like Dolby or like HDMI. It is what it is. There's no room for interpretation.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's what makes it different. It's very locked down. So, whatever devices that you're using that are Dante are just going to work.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Chris Tobin, I almost went to you a few minutes ago about your early work with AOIP. And it's great to see that it's come to this. You know, like 2 years ago at NAB, everybody was touting AES-67 or Dante or Wheatnet or Livewire. And the point was it's all audio over IP. And I think that's amazing. Chris, you don't want to inject anything at this point?
Well, I love the Dante approach, because with Dante, we've been taking advantage of it. A couple of the facilities we go to record various artists have a Dante plant. So we go in with two MacBooks with Dante software on them, plug into their network, grab all the isolated feeds we need to make our mix, and we're off to the races and having a great time. So it's been very handy and convenient. We also have MADI converters as well with the laptop. So if we had to, we could do MADI as well into the computers. But I will say that in the last couple of years with the Dante delivery and the way it's been going through, the venues we've been attending and that have Dante has been really handy, very convenient. I think if I was to build out a facility, I'd probably do a hybrid approach. Dante in my post-production side and probably a more broadcast platform on the broadcast side to make it more usable. But definitely well worth it, and I'm glad to see SSL is going in the direction of making things easy. And you're right, MADI does have many flavors, and I've done many things with MADI over the years, and it has always been a challenge at times, especially when you're on a set or a live production, like, oh no, this is not going to be a good sign when the connector and the light and the error lights are
still
flashing.
Here. Oh, there it is. Okay. So we're here in this truck, and in the second half of our show, we're really going to focus on the stuff that's in this truck here. We're going to talk about, let Steve and Dan talk about the technologies that are in the new SSL consoles and what some of their uses are and use cases are. So I thought we'd spend the last couple of minutes here before we take a break again, finishing up about the interconnection technology. So earlier, gentlemen, you were giving a tour of this truck to the local SBE chapter here in Nashville. And I asked you, hey, is there a PTP clock with Dante? Because I really don't know, because with AES-67, you have to have a clock, whether it's a Grandmaster or whether it's just a local arbitrary clock is not important in smaller situations. But so tell me about Dante and clocking.
So Dante basically automatically assigns a clock master. So if you're in a strictly pure Dante network and Dante environment, Dante can be the clock master, and you can designate a device as the master. And there you can have a secondary master as well, so that if the primary clock falls over, that the secondary master will pick up. In most broadcast facilities, though, basically you're going to use house sync as the master clock within the facility itself, and then Dante will just slave to that. So you can just operate that as a normal sort of, you know, traditional broadcast where you're using kind of video reference as your as the sync. Obviously, on the truck, we're kind of standalone. We don't need to tie into any kind of house sync, so we can just use the Dante clocking system, and they do that quite well.
I take it that clock traverses the Ethernet network.
Correct. Right. Yep. Right. It goes on the same cable.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. That's, you know, for folks who have hooked up Blackburst and sync, you know, like
right,
that for
right.
years.
No, it's all everything. I mean, you know, the clocking, control data, and audio all travel on the same cable.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned redundant networks. How does that work? Do Dante devices typically have two network interfaces? Or
Some do and some don't. Okay. So all of our Dante devices are redundant. So you have a main and a primary, and the two networks live totally independently. Yeah. So we have two switches at every point, and we have two sets of cables. Audio is constant on both at all times. So if you ever lose a network, if a switch loses power, anything like that happens, it's going to automatically transition to the secondary network, and that happens in one sample, so there's no audio dropout. Everything happens immediately.
Wow. And I noticed, I'm looking at the rack over here, and I'm sorry you can't see it at home here, but I'm looking at a 6-foot equipment rack here, and you've got a variety of items in there, but I see a couple of look like business type switches, but then a couple of maybe Cisco switches that are is that what's handling your Dante network?
Yeah, so there you can use pretty much any switch. I mean, another great thing about Dante is that it's totally standard TCP/IP.
Yeah.
So it's RJ45, Cat6 cables. We're using Cisco 300 series switches in here. But pretty much any managed switch will work.
Cool. When we continue with the show, we're going to be looking at this console behind us here, at least talking about its features and looking at it as best we can. We're also going to be talking about this concept of a console-less console. I actually did a paper at NAB this past year in April about this idea of where's my console. Mm-hmm. You want to give us a little tease about what we're going to learn about a console-less console?
Well, I think the underlying architecture of the systemd technology is that the console is basically built on software, and the entire operation of the console is done or can be accomplished through a touchscreen. So the control surface is merely just another way to talk to the software interface of the console. And with the movement to automation in most many of the local television stations, where they're running automation systems and not having necessarily an audio control room or an audio operator, we saw the opportunity to provide that type of an interface where they could basically have a rack mount device that is the full console, just not requiring any kind of physical tactile interface, but being able to set up the console and program the console through the touchscreen. But then once it's running under automation, nobody needs to touch it anyway. It's just going to do its thing based on the automation system rundown.
Well, I haven't been on your side of things yet, a TV station, but you guys didn't know the local NBC affiliate here in Nashville, when they're desperate, I go in and do the weather. And they're automated there. Now, they've got, I believe it's I'm not sure if it's Ross Automation or something else. Well, you have an automation system here.
We're running Ross Overdrive on this.
Oh, show. Ross Overdrive is here. Okay,
yeah,
so
right. We have a demo of that.
So your console-less console that Ross can run that, and you don't even have to. I mean, nobody has to be touching a touchscreen if that's running properly, right?
Nobody should touch the touchscreen once it's running. Right, okay. Right. I mean, you only use the touchscreen to program the show. Once the show is programmed, then it basically just runs unmanned and unassisted.
Wow. Wow. We're going to hear more about that and hear what SSL is doing, you know, how they're putting to use the Dante standard and networking and console-less consoles. Now, this is not a console-less console behind me. That's a heck of a console. We're going to find out about that, too. Hey, Chris, you are going to help me out by talking about our friends at Broadcast Tools and the ProMix 4. What you got for us?
All right, the ProMix 4, Broadcast Tools. Those of you who know the product know very well that they're very handy little boxes. So ProMix 4 is a compact, full-featured, monaural audio mixing console, perfect for remotes. I mean, many a broadcast is needed, and you need something compact, simple, straightforward. And you know why it's important to know this? Because if you have someone like you, say your assistant in the remote group out in the field doing something, and they call you for help, the nice thing about the Broadcast Tools products is they're very straightforward connections, XLR, quarter-inch, eighth-inch mini, very straightforward, USB and a LAN connector. So that's all you have to worry about remembering to explain to them which cable's plugged in where or not. Very handy, very, very handy. So between that and its combination of microphone line inputs, dedicated fourth input that may be switched between a balanced input, and the built-in USB audio interface, which is very handy to have. And then there's the headphone outputs. Guess what? They're all quarter-inch. Very convenient. And that's important to have. And they give you the ability to mix, pan, allow custom mixes in the headphones for various reasons, or IFB, if you want to call it that. And then there's the other features that are selectable program limiter, which is very handy if you're feeding codecs or a streaming machine downstream from the mixer. You know, a sporting event or a music event or some coverage news event tend to have audio levels you may not be able to control. Limiter is very handy. And the best part is the output of the mixer is an XLR. It's a balanced output, so it's very convenient, very straightforward. It's designed for professional broadcast environments. Very important to remember that. These are details that you overlook sometimes when you're excited about a new product and go, this is not going to work. Monitor output with muting and volume control, mix minus output for connection to external hybrids or anything. It could be a wireless IFB transmitter if you choose. And then there's an on-air light relay output. How convenient is that? How many times you buy a mixer and go, yeah, I can't tally a light when I have a need for muting or alerting? Well, that's not good. You have it here in a small package. It's very convenient. It's a great choice for remote broadcasts, even podcasting applications. So you have radio stations doing podcast programming, and you have a small area in the basement or upstairs in the executive area, and you want to put together a quick studio. You've got it. Everything you need in a simple form factor. Check it out, broadcasttools.com. Go to the products page, ProMix 4. And then when you figure out this is what you want, you give the guys at Broadcast General Store a call. Make sure you check with Lee Freshwater or maybe Buck Waters, if you want, or Kristen, any of the gang at Broadcast General Store. They'll be more than happy to help you out. And you know darn well they know exactly what they're talking about because they are all about the customer, you at the end of the day. So between broadcasttools.com and Broadcast General Store staff, you've got it made. You can't go wrong with it. So ProMix 4, broadcasttools.com. Check it out. I'm telling you, it's well worth it. And looking at the picture, reading the features, I have no problem using it for anything that I've been doing. Kirk, you still there?
Yeah, I sure am. Thanks so much, Chris, for talking about the ProMix 4 from Broadcast Tools and Broadcast General Store. I really appreciate them sponsoring this week in Radio Tech, making my yacht payment. Well, not quite, but thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And thank you for you in the audience. Thank you for patronizing our sponsors, whether it's Lavo or whether it's Broadcast General Store or the Telos Alliance and any of their lines. We really do appreciate it. So, Chris, Chris, you've got a lot of wide-ranging experience. Me, I'm a radio engineer. You've been to lots of venues there in New York City and around, and you've been called in to consult a lot of things. So what these guys are going to say, Chris, you probably know, but a lot of what they're going to say now is new to me because I'm curious. I want to know this console behind us. Well, I'll let Steve answer or Dana. What are we looking at here right behind us, Steve?
So this is the System T S300 32 fader console.
Okay.
So System T is basically a product range. So it's not a specific console itself. So System T is basically consists of control surfaces, engines for audio processing, and I/O devices. Those are kind of the three building blocks of System T. So we have three different control surfaces for System T. We have the S500, which is our large format.
Yeah.
It can be up to 96 physical faders. Two touch screens, very, very large control surface. Then behind us here is the S300. This can be either a 16 fader or a 32 fader control surface, again, with touchscreen. Mm-hmm. And then we have the Tempest control rack, which is the console-less console.
So, oh, I'm sorry. Go,
so those are the three surfaces. Yeah. Yeah. And then we have two engines. We have a large engine, which is called the T80, mm-hmm. which has 800 paths for large broadcast productions. And then we have the T25 engine, which has 256 paths. And then we make a wide range of I/O devices that are all Dante in it based, from microphones to analog, AES, SDI, MADI, GPIO. So basically, the console is a control surface, an engine, and some assortment of I/O, and you're off and running.
Now, excuse me for being elementary, but this is the way I learned. So it's interesting to take what I already know and analog or analyze or compare that with what you've just said. So in the current world of radio broadcast and some television broadcast, yeah, we have these separate standalone I/O devices that will put out Ravenna or Wheatnet or Livewire, AES67 or Dante. Mm-hmm. And so we have the idea of that. And I guess we tend to put those I/O devices close to the devices that they're serving, close to the audio.
The sources. Yes.
Yeah, the sources. Yeah, correct. Sources or destinations. And then we network those through Ethernet switches. Then you have this concept of engines, mixing DSP-type engine mm-hmm. that'll do the mixing, do the effects, create mix minuses and back feeds and that kind of thing, right?
Correct.
And then we have the control surfaces or the lack of a hardware surface and have a virtual surface. So really we've got a lot of similarities mm-hmm. between the stuff that Chris and I know about and what you show here to places I can only dream of working, right?
It's audio. I mean, audio is audio. The applications only kind of differ depending on the kind of infrastructure and the requirements, but basically audio is audio. So everybody sort of, it's a very similar technology or terminologies. Just how do you use it and how does the application apply?
So I wonder if you could, you showed me a diagram of this yesterday and I'm curious to follow up because I work for the folks at Axie and we talk about mix engines and things like this, but this word path is a new word to me and you've used it several times to describe the size or capability of an engine. Mm-hmm. And what is that in your world? What does the word path mean?
Well, traditionally consoles have had an input output structure. Where you have input channels mm-hmm. and you have output buses. Mm-hmm. And that's been the way consoles have kind of been developed and designed for the last 30 or 40 years. With System T, we actually were able to change that kind of paradigm from a digital development standpoint to where the console is, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, is being developed in a software platform utilizing the engines are multi-core processors. So we're not using DSP chips or FPGAs.
Right.
We're basically developing this console in software, which means it's very configurable so that you can actually decide what type of console you need for that show. How many input channels do you want? How many mono? How many stereo? We're now doing immersive audio, so you can actually go up to 7.1.4. Then you can decide how many outputs do you want? How many program buses do you need? How many mix minuses? How many auxes? How many, program buses? So the console can be configured on the fly without having to reboot. You can add sources and destinations without having to lose audio. So it's some pretty revolutionary techniques and capabilities that this console provides that has really never been done before. And it's just brilliant. If you're in the middle of a show and you say, oh, I want another aux send, you can just program it into the console, basically type in the number and say, I need two more auxes. And meanwhile, the rest of the audio is still passing and everybody's still hearing what they need to hear, but you've just changed the configuration of your console. That's kind of the example of having a processing engine that's software-based. Uh-huh. Without hardware involved. Wow. So like when we went to immersive audio having a 7.1.4 capability in a traditional hardware console, you would have to design and develop a new circuit board for the output section of that console. With System T, we did not have to do that. We just had a software release, and anybody's console that they bought last year that was 5.1 could now do 7.1.4 with monitoring and all the proper capabilities.
Wow. We don't have enough time for you to explain immersive sound on the show. Radio's not into that.
The home viewers know what it's about.
Yeah.
And if you go to the movies, you know what it's about. Wow. I mean, that's what it's all about, is the Atmos Dolby Atmos.
Right. Well, I've gotten some demonstrations of that, and my jaw just drops. Right. And
So this is the first console that's kind of embedded to being able to mix that way without an external computer. You know, a lot of the way that immersive and Atmos mixing is done is through like an insert on a bus with a programmable piece of software and an external computer. But being able to have that busing architecture in our console and pan to the buses in that multi-channel environment is unique to SSL.
So yesterday, I'm sorry we just don't have the ability to pull the camera in and demonstrate what this thing can do on the screen. Trust me, it's amazing. And maybe you, listeners, viewers, maybe you've seen, digging into a channel strip on a console, this one or one like it, where you can really start to examine beautifully the EQ and dynamics. You can do dynamics on every channel, right?
Yes. Dynamics per channel.
Oh, what does that mean, two dynamics?
Two levels? Two complete dynamic sections.
Ah.
So that, because there's actually de-essing as well, so that, and you can route dynamics to different outputs. So you can put dynamics on, say, a direct output or a track bus that's for recording. That is a different compression scheme than what's on the input path going on the air.
And another kind of amazing thing is that it's not only on all the channels you have two dynamics and full EQ and full processing, you have it on every path. So any output you have it as well. So if you wanted to apply compression to the master of a mix minus bus or to your program output or to an aux, you can equalize those, you can add filters, you can add dynamics to that. So you have that on any path, regardless of input or output. So consoles traditionally haven't really had that available, but on the input channels.
So for a radio guy like me, okay, I go into a TV truck. There's a company here in town, TNDV, mm-hmm. that has trucks, and I see them doing these award shows, sports events. How do you know if your console's big enough to do a proposed event?
That's a good question, Kirk. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. I think people usually tend to overestimate what they think they need. Particularly people think they need a lot of faders when they don't really. But, as I say, because this console is configurable, it sort of takes a lot of that concern out of the equation, because you can, kind of build a very large console configuration where if you need, 48 mix minus buses, you can do that on this console. So, it can basically be rearranged in terms of the channel or the path resources as needed on a show-by-show basis, as opposed to traditional consoles, which are fixed architecture. You buy that console and that's what you get is, 24 inputs or 24 mix minuses or 16 auxes. And that's what it is. You can't change that after the fact. With this console, you can.
It just occurred to me, one of the big differences between my experience as an engineer with audio consoles and lots of other audio industries out there are that the people running audio consoles that I install and many of them that Chris Tobin installs are also the talent. In other words, they're not an A1, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They're not even A2. They're the disc jockey.
Right.
Nothing against disc jockeys, but they run their own board and they got to be simple to just get the things done that need to be done. And you have, I'm sorry this just occurred to me, you have real professionals running these things that have an idea of what audio, channel by channel, input by input, mix by mix, ought to sound like. And most of them probably know how to get there.
Yes and no.
Okay.
I mean, the television market has changed greatly over the years, where there are people mixing audio who are not necessarily experienced audio mixers. I think one of the interesting things about our console that we've really put a lot of forethought into is to make it simple, even though underneath the hood is a very, very powerful, complicated system. But from an operator standpoint, it's actually quite simple. That we use a lot of colorizing to kind of group things together so it's very recognizable. Uh-huh. The touchscreen aspect is very comfortable for a lot of people. Everybody's on their phone or their iPad. So it's not a sea of knobs and switches that tend to put people off a bit. This is sort of a much more visual kind of interface. Again, very graphical and very real time. So there's no sense of like I'm running a piece of software. A lot of times when you're sitting at a computer, you really feel like you're using a piece of software. Mm-hmm. This technology and it's a proprietary operating system that we use that's a real time OS. It's immediate. There's no lag. It feels as if you're running an analog console. You know, you push a button, you turn a knob, and it's instantaneous. So that's a big difference in terms of the instantaneous in its response.
Earlier we were talking about, you mentioned auto mix, and I've heard this, a couple of manufacturers are talking about auto mix. And I'm sure that auto mix is probably different in its in the way it works for different applications. Mm-hmm. What does auto mix mean to SSL?
Well, auto mix is a term that's kind of come about over the years. The technique and the concept has been around from the analog days. Actually, I'll give the tip of my hat to a gentleman out on the West Coast named Dan Dugan, who kind of developed this technology in the analog world, you know, probably in the 90s, or I don't even want to date him. But, I mean, it's been around for a long time, and they were always external devices. SSL was actually the first console manufacturer to integrate that into a digital desk, which we did in the 2000s, early 2000s with the C10 and the C100 series. Hmm. Auto mixing basically means here we are, the three of us sitting talking to each other. I don't know what it sounds like on the air, but in a television studio, particularly where you have a very live environment and you have people talking on a set, the microphones, if every mic is open, then we're all bleeding into each other's microphones. And typically a television audio mixer is opening and closing the faders as each person is talking. When you're on a panel discussion where it's not scripted, that becomes much more challenging to do, where people tend to upcut things or miss things, or even in a newscast where somebody's mic is pulled down and the weather guy, like you do the weather, if you wanted to joke around with the sports guy and they've got your mic pulled down, you're going to sound like you're out in left field.
Sure.
With our auto mix software, all the faders remain open and up, and the console software automatically detects who's speaking and who's not speaking. And in the background, it's attenuating the audio of the inactive channels. So it sounds as if you've pulled those faders down, but you haven't. But the console is basically, if you want to think of it as ducking, but it's much more sophisticated than that. And as everybody speaks, then their channels will open. So if everybody starts talking at the same time, everyone will be heard. And so it makes for a much cleaner show, and actually also allows for less experienced mixers who aren't as comfortable with opening and closing faders and trying to follow a conversation to be able to have that show sound really clean, as if a really seasoned professional is mixing that show.
Wow. Dan, anything to add to that? The idea of auto mix?
Well, that was a pretty thorough explanation, yeah. I think, you know, and I learned a lot of what I know from Steve about auto mixes. But we have it on our broadcast consoles and on our live consoles. And, you know, I think this situation would be a perfect example of where it'd be useful. I'm sure if it was enabled, if we were using it here, it would clean up what the audience is hearing.
So, Steve, if you'd like to take a minute and address anything more that you'd like to highlight about the System T, the 300 console here, love to hear about them now, and then we'll talk about the thing that you can't see over here.
Right. So, System T and the S300 console, as I said, you know, the software is the same between the large surface and the no surface. Hmm. So we run the exact same software application. I should also point out that the software that runs the console can run as a Windows file on any computer and be used offline. So you can actually build a show and create everything from routing to naming to channel assignments, et cetera, EQ, aux sends, and build that show and save it onto a USB stick and then load that show when you get to work. And basically it will come up as if you sat there in the control room and built that show.
Wait a minute. I'm the A1 guy at a TV station. We're starting a new sports show tonight for Friday night high school, you know, after the news. And I can get in my driverless car and poke around on my computer on the way to work and say, oh, this guy's going to be on, this guy's going to be on. We're going to take a live feed from here and here. And we're going to need a back feed there. We need a back feed. I can build that show on my way to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or maybe a more practical application on a plane on the way to Los Angeles to mix, you know, a big award show.
Exactly right.
Holy camoly.
The other nice thing about it is it's a great training tool.
Sure.
So for people who want to familiarize themselves with the console's functionality and feature set, it's a great way for people to actually get familiar with what the console's capabilities are, because everything that the software does here is exactly the same, except you're not going to hear any audio. That's the only difference.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting about that software capability is the console does allow for external computers to log in as a client. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you can actually have two other computers. So in addition to the main control surface, whether it's the large one or any of them, you can actually log in remotely with that same laptop. So if you're on the network that the console's on, you then become another control surface instance that you could have a guy submixing or routing for you or doing some other things in the same room or in a different room. As long as you're on the same network, that same laptop software can actually run the console remotely.
This networking audio is amazing.
It is.
Oh my goodness. Chris, I haven't heard from you in a while. Feel free to make a comment or a question.
No. Steve's touching all the points. I mean, I totally agree. And the auto mix is a great feature. And we produce several different shows here that would come in very handy on many occasions. But the IP audio routing and the flexibility, like I've always said, the workflow capabilities are limitless. I mean, they really are. It's up to your imagination. And Kirk, you know, when I installed that system way back in the early days at that news operation, we pretty much had offsite control and did all kinds of crazy things for election night coverage and producing shows, and it made much easier production and broadcast than the old days of Ward Beck console and trying to figure out how to wire something in remotely from across town. So it's pretty wild what you can do. And I think the SSL folks, sounds like from what Steve's describing, have figured out what's the best approach for workflow and makes it pretty much you're the driver's seat.
So we touched on this notion of a console-less console, and let's talk specifically about SSL's offering for that.
So again, the fact that we could run this console as software and that the functionality in its entirety, everything from monitoring to volume control to obviously to faders and mixing, appears on the screen, that we realized that we had the capability to actually remove a physical tactile control surface from the what you would think of as an audio console and put it in a 3U rack with a retractable touchscreen built into that 3U rack, or you can run it with an external HDMI touchscreen and basically then have all the functionality and operational control over the console, but not needing a physical control surface with the traditional faders and knobs and switches.
And is this an application where typically you have audio that follows video?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the primary application for that, as I mentioned, is in the local television station market is a big market for that, where, you know, people have automated newscasts where, as you mentioned, what you're doing locally here in Nashville, where there is no audio operator. So these automation systems that control the audio, basically when an anchor or newscaster is on air, they open that microphone. So all of that is controlled basically by the automation system. And so the faders in the console or the faders on the screen will actually move up and down as that cue plays and triggers what's being played. The other interesting application for it is, and I think, you know, it was mentioning, you know, sort of the remote broadcast type of application or remote recording application, is you could take a Tempest control rack out with a touchscreen and a laptop and have one hell of a powerful recording system very compact environment with all the processing capabilities that we've been speaking about, but have that in a little remote flypack recording rig or put it at a venue like a stadium for a sports broadcast and be able to actually pipe that back to, you know, a regional sports network or a truck from a facility where it becomes basically a remote console, but something that could easily be in a very short rack and be easily set up and torn down without having to have a little portable trailer with an audio console in it.
Well, and that's a great idea, because no matter where you go, whatever audio I/O you need, you carry as much or as little as you need, and then you just network that.
Correct.
So if you have some mics on the football field, yeah, you put some I/O down there, the boxes, right?
That's correct.
And then network it right back up.
That's correct.
Holy wow, man! You could even use wireless IP if it's configured right to carry that.
Dante's not wireless as yet. So Dante is a wired network because of the demands of its bandwidth requirements and the delay management and latency management.
Gotcha.
So Dante does not provide as yet a wireless capability. It's a wired capability.
Gotcha. Okay.
But that's because of the low latency of it.
Now, Dan was telling me earlier today about this Tempest unit that was added. I know you can't see this on here, but was there anything over here before you added the Tempest?
No.
Okay, so tell the audience how relatively easy it was here to add some furniture here and stick this thing in the rack, and you've got a whole other console over here.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing was we had other people that built all the furniture, so I didn't have to do that part of it. I wouldn't have been able to, but configuring the system, the hardest thing we had to do was run a conduit, actually, and then it's really, we have the engine and the Tempest control rack together. Those are simply connected by a redundant network as well. So on the consoles, you don't have any sort of XLR connections or analog cabling. The connectivity of it takes about 60 seconds. We have a switch here, and if we want to add any IO, for example, we don't have a monitor section. We have a monitor section on the Tempest control rack, but it's not connected physically. So the way we monitor it is by going through this console behind us.
Oh, sure.
And the beauty of networking is that you can send the monitor section output of the Tempest control rack over here, and we can hear it. But if we wanted to have, say, a dedicated set of speakers at that mix position, we could just connect any Dante device, which could be as simple as a volume knob feeding a speaker, or even just a Dante speaker itself. And because we've simply connected that to the network, we could just plug it into the switches right in this rack, and it would be good to go. So configuring it, as you can see, it's just two boxes that we've screwed into the rack, and then some network connections, and you're pretty much good to go. There's currently, we don't have any IO boxes, devices connected here, but because it's all in one network in the truck, I could connect microphones in the back of the truck or the front of the truck up here and bring them up on either console or both consoles.
Any IO that's on this console can be brought up on that console.
You'll see everything on any of them. And back to the remote software Steve was talking about too, you can see all that there too. And if you were to, like, talking about your discussion of, say, a football arena, and you want to have microphones on the field, one great thing about Dante is that all of the routing and the devices are name based.
Yeah.
So if you have, like, say, an 8 input 8 output SSL stage box, it could be in a road case, and you could move it all about the facility, and you could plug it in at any position where you have network connectivity to your Dante network. And as soon as you plug it in, if you've built routes for it, they're going to just happen. So because the network's going to immediately see the device, see its name, the routing is all done. So that's what's really cool about Dante Discovery. You never have to worry about setting your IP addresses and going in and configuring things. You just connect it and you're good to go. And you could also control things like your mic preamps over it as well. So you could adjust that from the control room or from on the field. You could have an app on your PC and you could connect that and drive them down there as well.
Steve, we're running real short of time here, but before we take our last break, I want to hear what are the most common use cases for a console like this one right behind us?
Well, it is in a broadcast kind of platform. So, the majority of our installations are in television type production facilities. We actually recently did an installation at WXPN, which is the World Cafe broadcast facility in Philadelphia. That's a live music venue. We do have a number of them in trucks around the world. So they're in a wide array of types of installations and facilities. So I don't think there's really a typical one as yet, but it is a high powered broadcast console and typically found in live television, whether it's sports or news or, television production.
So what is there a different SSL console more appropriate for house of worship or music venue, or would this work for that too?
Oh, this would definitely work for that. Ah. I mean, we also do have a live console range that is more for touring systems and very popular in the house of worship market as well. They share a lot of the same kind of concepts. They are both Dante enabled, so they can share IO technology. I mean, that's one of the neat things about System T in either a house of worship platform or in a live television environment where you have a production mixer, you have a PA mixer, you might have a monitor mixer, and all three of those console positions could share the same IO and be on the same network.
Ah, okay. Okay. So you may still have these three different dedicated jobs doing things that are require a full-time person to do.
Right.
But they can all use the same I/O.
Correct. And may have different control surface requirements as well, but all share the I/O through the SSL network capabilities.
We got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with a couple of tips. And I didn't warn Dan and Steve here about coming up with a tip of the week, but I know they're going to have something exciting to leave you with. Words of wisdom, along with Chris Tobin's usual words of wisdom, coming up after we hear this word from Lava. We'll be right back.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes. And enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavo radio tech at www.lawo.com/twert.
Not the first time.
Thanks a lot to Lavo for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. It's Kirk Harnack along here with Dan Griffin and Steve Zaretsky. I'll get that.
You got it.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Perfect. Chris Tobin is along too. We're in the SSL truck. We haven't mentioned that enough. It's traveling across America. It has done that numerous times, actually. I've actually been in the truck twice before when it's been here in Nashville, typically associated with an AES function, or you've appeared at a recording studio. Mm-hmm. And so I get to see both a recording studio and your truck. So it's been a real delight to have you guys come by.
Thanks for having us.
And I guess Nashville's a popular stop for you.
Yeah, it's a great city. Lots going on here. Lots of audio. A lot of audio people in Nashville.
Well, on this show, we try to educate both me, Chris barely needs it, and our audience too, about resources where they can find out more. And Audinate has some good resources, don't they?
Yeah, I think the Audinate website is particularly well done. Everything from certification to very kind of excellent explanations of Dante networking and audio over IP. Very well done with videos, and you can even actually go online and get a certification and kind of walk through some kind of real-time examples of how to set up a network and how to learn how to use it, and then go and take a little online quiz and get certified. They actually have level 1, 2, and 3 certification, It's very simple, but it's a great way to learn how Dante can be used.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes at audinate.com.
Yeah, audinate.com.
Okay, yes. All right. And you wanted to give us some resources for SSL, how to follow you and how we can stalk you on where? Facebook?
Yeah, so the best place to start is solidstatelogic.com, which is our website. So in addition to Audinate's resources, of course, we outline all of our products on our website, but we also have a bunch of educational white papers that can kind of help you delve into the audio over IP and kind of some of the technologies we've talked about today and how they work, like CPU-based audio processing. If you go to solidstatelogic.com/worldtour, you can actually see the truck tour on our website, and you can request stops. So since you guys are presumably all over the world, we may be coming to a city near you, and we're happy to have people come and stop by the demos if you want to see this stuff in person, and you can actually hear the console, which is, of course, the highlight of it. And additionally, you can find the truck on Instagram at SSL Truck Tour and on Facebook as Solid State Logic Truck Tour. And you can, again, see where I'm taking the tour and try to catch up with somewhere. We'd love to see you guys out on the road and show you this stuff in more detail.
I'll put all those links in the show notes. So if you look up the show on YouTube, the Torch channel, or on thisweekinradiotech.com, you'll see it there. You can click on the show on the show note link. .com. Chris Tobin, I know you're still there. You've been so polite to sit back and listen. Have you got a tip for us this week?
Simple tip, just a reminder to everybody, make sure you document everything you're doing. Now that we're talking about audio over IP and the capabilities that it offers you and the workflow solutions, now is more than ever to document. Don't just rely on a piece of paper and a little label maker. Go for it, do it right, and this way you can have a lot of fun making sure you don't get those 2 o'clock in the morning phone calls. So documentation is key. And if you're thinking about job security, don't go the route of saying, if I don't keep it documented, they can't get rid of me. It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. Always good advice. And I love that these systems, you know, Dante and other AOIP systems, some have, you know, almost self-documenting stuff, but you still got to label the wires. You still got to let people know what was what so they can find the right thing. All right. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I appreciate you letting us do the show from the truck. I wish you safe travels ahead. And we go to that website to stalk you guys. Which one is it?
SolidStateLogic.com/World Tour.
World Tour. We'll put that in the show notes. Chris Tobin, thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. October 9th, it sounds like they're coming to town. Come to New York City.
Really?
There you go. We'll be there.
We'll be there.
All right. Is that around AES time?
The week before.
Oh, okay. All right, good. And so thanks again to Dan and Steve with Solid State Logic SSL. I'm Kirk Harnack, work for the guys at the Telos Alliance, and hope you'll join us every week on This Week in Radio Tech. Oh, also thanks to our producer, Suncast. Thanks for keeping up with us and helping us out to get every show started, especially today. Thanks again, Suncast. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.